Welcome to the Approaching the Natural podcast with Sid Garza-Hillman and sponsored by the Stanford Inn Eco Resort on the Mendocino coast of California. Sid is a certified nutritionist, health coach, and author of Approaching the Natural, a health manifesto, out now on Roundtree Press. Sid is also the programs director at the Stanford Inn's Mendocino Center for Living Well, one of the most holistic and integrated wellness centers in the country. The Approaching the Natural podcast explores all aspects of human health, including nutrition, movement, mindfulness, art, and much more.
Hello, small steppers. This is Sid Garza-Hillman back once again with the Approaching the Natural podcast, where each week I come on and discuss my philosophy of health and happiness and how I think the best way to approach that philosophy is. I'm the small step advocate, so if that doesn't give it away, I don't know what does, but I do advocate for small steps. If you're just joining me, you'll quickly get where I come from on this and moving on. So the big news, everybody, because I know that you guys have been on the edge of your seats, and my marathon ran it yesterday, and exciting news is that I broke 4 hours and 25 minutes. Damn it. Yeah. Not only did I not break 4 hours, but I was about 16 minutes slower than the one I did in December. Now, you may be thinking, Sid, what the F? And I'm thinking the same thing, but I'm not really thinking the same thing because I can kind of explain what happened. But I'm not going to jump over that yet. The fact of the matter is I'm actually not that broken up about it. Maybe I should be. Some good, trying to see the silver lining here. Am I disappointed? A little bit. I did train my ass off, as you know. Did double the mileage this time around than the first time. Definitely a harder course this time. So I have to, you know, put that into perspective. Learned a bunch of stuff, so that's kind of cool. Now, as I've discussed, one of my goals was actually to enjoy this marathon, and I ran it without a watch, and that turns out to be a mistake. So, yeah, no, I will not run without a watch again, and here's why. So anyway, back to the thing. So a couple things. So one is that I wanted to enjoy this running through the redwoods, and I was like, you know what? I really want to enjoy the process because I did enjoy the training process. Was I kind of over the training at the end? Yes. Was I happy to get up today and not be part of a training plan? I was. I need a break. I did that other one in December, and 2 weeks later started the training plan for this one. So I am in need of a break. I will get back into exercise very soon. It will not be that kind of exercise. It will be running. Because I love running, but I'm just going to kind of get back into it for the love, and we'll just, you know, see where it goes from there. But, however, what I learned in my marathon process by Sid Garza-Hillman, number one, I have an issue with pacing. So here's the thing what happened. So I decided after my first marathon in December, where I obviously came out too fast, I pushed it to kind of keep to that mileage, you know, per mile pace that was going to get me the under 4 hours kind of thing. Did some reading and they were like, well, you really want to go slower in the first half, and never has there been like a personal record, or like, not a personal record, but like a record set where the second half was slower than the first half. It's always the second half is faster. The first half is always just like you kind of get out there, you get warm, you get the nerves off you, and then second half, boom, you kick it in. So that's the mistake I made the first one. This time I was like, okay, I'm not wearing a watch. I'm just going to freaking feel good. I'm just going to feel my body and feel good. So I did that for the first 5 or 6 miles. And I'm running out there and I'm breathing and I'm like looking at the redwoods and I'm just in the good, feeling good. So some jackass at mile 5 is calling out the time. And I thought there would be like screens or like, you know, like a digital readout that I could just kind of ignore. But they're calling out the thing. So at mile 5, I was at 49 minutes. So that's 10-minute miles, right? Now, what I didn't factor in is that it took me like 4 or 5 minutes to get to the start line, right? Because you're like in this crowd of people. And then the first mile I mean, this is like a narrow path too. So like the first, I would say at least half mile, I'm barely running. Like you're in the middle of just like a sea of people. So you're just not rolling. So part of that was that. So I'm thinking to myself, okay, 10 minute miles. Like that's a little slower than I was kind of hoping, but fine. Like I really am taking this easy. I was all happy. I was like, great. And I'm just enjoying this. So you run out and you go 6.5 miles out and you turn around, and you come back. This is how that this route is on this particular race. On the way back of the 6 mile, I'm at mile about 8 or 9 and I running next to this woman, we were kind of in the same pace. And she said, what is your typical pace? And I said, well, I kind of hang around 9. Now I've been training at like 8.5, 8:45 pretty comfortably, you know, not for the long runs, but for like the 8 mile runs, you know, not for like the 18 mile runs in other words. And so I say, you know, 9 minute miles, that's about. And I knew that I really wanted to average 9 to break my 4. And so my 4 hours. And so she goes, oh, well, you don't even want to know what the pace is right now. Of course, she has a watch. So when somebody says, oh, you don't even want to know, I'm going, I totally want to know. And so I go, why? We're slower? And she goes, oh, no, we're way faster. Okay. Now, what I should have done is slowed down. But I was feeling good. Why was I feeling good? Because I'm running, you know, during this process, during the training process, I'm running 8 to 10 miles at a good lick. Not 26, mind you. But I'm running 8, and so I'm running probably at that point like an 8 or 8:15 pace, and I'm feeling fine, great. Now as you come back down that 6, so you go 6.5 out and 6.5 back, I'm coming around to a turn where you head out for another leg where you go about 6.6 out and 6.6 back. And around that turn, my dad, who came up with me, is there, and he knew when he started his watch when he started. He said when I came around that corner, I was sub 2 hours. So I had made up for, you know, the first 5 miles, 10-minute miles, and then I'm like kicking ass the way back down. I'm not a boy with the details. Suffice it to say, I had gone that second leg pretty fast and obviously blew that out. So I come around and I head out for the next leg, and I'm just kicking it, feeling good up until mile 18. Now, at mile 18, I decide to stop, slow down, not to a walk, but just kind of slow down pretty abruptly to get a thing of water. As soon as I hit the brakes a little bit, my left calf just tightens like a mofo. And I went, oh, no. So I grab the water and I get right back running. As it kind of loosens up a little bit, I go, okay, whew, crisis averted until like another 500 feet when it starts to tighten up. And that began a lifelong struggle. And I don't mean literally lifelong. I just mean it seemed like an entire life over the next 8 miles of me running a half a mile and then stretching. And then running a half a mile to a mile and then massaging my calf. And there was literally a time where I looked at my calf and could see visibly a ridge in the muscle, like a dent going up and down my left calf, like a dent. And it was moving. My calf was like the muscles were. I thought there was going to be like an alien that would just like break out of my calf, and I'd be like, "That explains everything." But it didn't. No alien. At least it could still be there. I don't know. But it was literally a dent down the like my calf. It was dented. I've never seen anything like it. Felt it like unbelievable. So I was literally, you know, and I'd still get back on running. I was running a pretty good pace, but I'd have to stop. And it was such a disappointment because I finished this damn race not even out of breath. I mean, I had the cardiovascular fitness, and I don't know why I cramped up like that, except to say that I think I blew it out too early. That's the only thing I can think about. So why do I think running without a watch was a mistake? Because I think when I'm going to, and this is not me thinking, by the way, this is my wife who goes, you know, going by feeling is fine, except for you didn't train going a bunch of 26-mile runs. Like, you have to pay attention and maybe slow down even though you feel okay at 8.5-minute miles. Slow down on purpose because, you know, you did your long runs at like 9.5, 9-minute miles. So if you're running at 8-minute miles at mile 8, you've got 18 miles left. She was a lot nicer in the way that she said that. So I'm just like, whatever. I got to tell you, the first 18 miles, I totally enjoy myself. was talking to people, carrying on conversations, met a real cool dude named Russell, who was celebrating what would have been his dad's 96th birthday. You know, just cool. I enjoy myself. I actually enjoy myself for the first 18. The last eight didn't, gotta tell you, didn't. And I was so kind of miserable toward the end that I was picturing a burrito that I was going to have after the marathon. Like, I was kind of over the marathon at mile 18 when my calf started. I was like, well, now I just got to get back. And I'm going to totally have a burrito, which I did. I had a burrito and beans and rice and salsa and guacamole and grilled veggies. Great friggin' burrito. Okay, so upside of the process. Am I derailed that I did not break 4 hours? No, I am not. Wish I had. I'll be honest. Wish I had. But there was other things. I didn't want it to be not breaking 4 hours and not enjoying the process or not enjoying the run. And I enjoyed most of the run and enjoyed the process of training. I pushed myself. I feel that I achieved a lot in this. The bigger news is that my recovery, and this is going to be surprising. It's surprising to me because my calf was so tight. My recovery is unparalleled, even from the half marathons I've done. Like, this is one day later. I ran this yesterday. Today, I'm walking around, no problem. Minimal soreness. I'm going up and down stairs. After the last marathon, it was a good 2 or 3 days where if I was sitting in a chair and got up, I had to like help myself get up. Today, I'm going up and down stairs at the wellness center. Like, I'm just like, no problem. Like, I'm not even knowing, you know, I'm not thinking about day, minute to minute how sore I am, which is, I think that's kind of cool. So that was one thing. During the training, I didn't get sick, didn't get injured. And so all in all, a good process. I think I need to work on my race tactics to pace myself in that regard. But more importantly, I totally appreciate all the words of support from you guys, and just super cool. So you know what? It's a learning process. Like I've always said in this podcast, I am in the practice that you guys are in, and we're in this together. Do I have an approach that I like to share that I think works? I do. And I'm sharing that with you each week that I come here. But we're in it together. And part of this is, you know, my whole thing about goal setting and you know, what I talked about last week is like at the end of the day, 4 hours is random. I set it myself. It has nothing to do with anything. It's totally pulled out of the air. It's a nice even number. And, frankly, I like the fact that my marathon time was 4:20 because I was running it in Humboldt. One of the marijuana capitals of the world. Now, if you don't know the 4:20 reference, Google 4:20. And cannabis, or 4:20 and marijuana, and you'll thank me. Okay, so that was it, 4:20, and finished having a burrito. Totally made sense. Okay, onwards and upwards, everybody. So next order of business, a few little show notes, and I'm whipping through these lickety-split. Here we go, ready? Instagram, Twitter, at Sid Garza Hillman, Facebook, Transitioning to Health. Go to my website, transitioningtohealth.net. Put in your email address, you get a free chapter of my book, Approaching the Natural Health Manifesto. There you can find all that I offer and podcasts and more. Got some cool new clients recently. One from a thing I did with Matt Frazier on his No Meat Athlete Academy. He had me on there as a guest, and I did a little Q&A thing, and somebody was listening and signed up. So it's kind of cool. So we're rolling and getting some good work done. If you dig this podcast, go and do a review for me, please. It totally helps the podcast and puts the word out and keeps this for free. You know what I'm saying? Getting the word out. So throw on iTunes, throw me a review or a book, whatever. Okay. The Spreecast I did last Saturday, I don't know when you're listening to this, but it was May 3rd. And was awesome. Bigger group this time, so it's growing. I really dig it. It's free, by the way. So the next one, got it set up already, everybody, June 7th. Saturday, June 7th. It's a free Spreecast. Great questions, great comments. You know, just super cool. Love to see people getting on board with that. And it's fun for me because I can actually go back and forth with you guys instead of not being able to via this podcast. And I still love the podcast. I'm not saying that. Lastly, in the notes, kind of, you know how I don't sell anything, nothing. I don't sell anything. I'm not hooked up to anything. I'm not, you know, sponsored by anything. Does that make me financially intelligent? Not so much. But it makes me conflict free in that regard, except I'm thinking about doing t-shirts. right? They don't come with protein powder. They're just t-shirts. I don't know if that's interesting to you guys. I haven't made any yet. Kind of toying with the idea. A little approaching the natural t-shirt. I'd wear one. You know, if you have strong opinions about that either way, shoot me an email or about anything else you might have strong opinions on. And by the way, gotten some awesome, again, great emails. Got an email from a woman in Austin, Texas, I think. And she is digging the website. Digging the podcast. Woo, must be the marathon. And she said if I was ever out that way, she's going to take me to dinner. Now, all I'm saying is dinner invites, okay? I'm just saying, it's pretty sweet. Now, why didn't the person in Switzerland offer to take me out to dinner? That I don't know. It doesn't seem fair. Now, I love Austin. I've played music there a bunch of times. But I'm just saying, if somebody wanted to fly me to Switzerland for dinner, that would be pretty sweet. A little cheese, a little chocolate, Swiss Army knife. I think that's literally like every Swiss person I've ever met. If you ever meet a Swiss person, just tell them to empty their pockets. There will be cheese, chocolate, and a Swiss Army knife. Like every person I've ever met. And it's unbelievable. I don't even know why they do that. They're so uniform. By the way, if you're ever in Switzerland and they don't call it a Swiss Army knife. They just call it an army knife. Moving on. Okay, so... I don't know why this is relevant at all, but my daughter was on the phone with her friend, and I went back and made some like idiotic joke. And my wife was like, I walked back out all proud of myself. My wife is like, you're like the dorky dad. And I was like, oh my God, I'm the dorky dad. And I was like, I thought I was like the cool, I mean, I can ride a unicycle. That's cool, right? How can they not? Okay. Moving on. I'm kind of whipping through here. Enjoying myself. You know, I'm glad to be back. I got to tell you, there's a weight lifted now that the training thing is over. Like I woke up, I think I was a little traumatized. I trained really hard. And I did some things that I didn't know I could do. Like I'm running, you know, better than ever before. So yes, I did not run. I had an off day. There's no doubt about that. I'm not going to throw it all out, the experience. That's for sure. Did a lot of exploration with meditation during my running. I'm going to do a little writing on that pretty soon. I'll let you know when that gets posted, if it does. I got to tell you, it's been a pretty cool thing. It's been a very cool process. I wouldn't trade it for the world. And I will do another one. That's my plan. When, I don't know. I'm also thinking about maybe doing a 50 miler. That's where I'm at. You know, sort of like, okay, moving on. So I was in the car the other day, and I was driving my daughter to school, and she was eating this snack, because we, you know, she gets up and we have a fruit smoothie in the morning, all of the family, and then on the way in to school, the kids have a little snack, and they have lunch later on. Whatever. And usually the snack is like, we get this Food for Life, I think the brand is, and it's a gluten-free brown rice bread. So we, you know, sometimes it's on that. So we toast that or whatever and put that thing on there. And so she had this, whatever she had on it, avocado and I think a little Daiya dairy-free cheese and lettuce and tomato, whatever else she gets. She likes that kind of stuff. So it kind of smelled like a Big Mac. So kind of weird. Okay, so here's what happened. My experience, I'm in the front of the car and I get a whiff and I'm not thinking. I think we're listening to music or whatever. It wasn't Katy Perry, I'll tell you that much. God. And I'm not the cool dad. So her toast smells like a Big Mac, right? Before I'm conscious of the fact that I'm smelling this thing and I'm realizing I'm like transported back in time to my youth, you know, playing soccer when I was, you know, 11 and going to McDonald's afterwards. Like that was kind of I have very fond memories of that. And it got me thinking and I think I've said this before, but you know, now I'm into 33 podcasts and clearly, you know, I see the numbers and people are listening a lot and it's great, but I think people aren't kind of going back to number two, you know what I'm saying? So I'm revisiting things now and then just to kind of keep things current where I stand on everything. And one of the things I've talked about is that humans have a relationship with food that is, it's unnatural. Okay. In nature, our relationship with food is one of primarily of survival and nutrition. In the sense that we will need food to survive in nature. I mean, imagine if there was a global meltdown and you were pushed into the mountains, you wouldn't be going, you know what I feel like tonight? I feel like mac and cheese. That's kind of just, what do you think about that? You guys into mac and cheese? Show of hands. You'd be like, look at that rodent. I'm getting that bad boy. Or, you know, grab those leaves or chew that grass. And one thing I actually learned from a survivalist is that there's no evil twin of grass. Like you can, if you're in the wild, you can find grass and you can eat it. You can't digest the fiber, but you can chew it and get the juice out of it. And this guy literally, he said you could live like very, very well for weeks on that. I thought that was kind of interesting. Not going to do that. Anyway, so my point is that we have in the modern world, we have a relationship with food that has kind of in line with the modern world become removed from nature, just like the modern world. As the modern world gets more removed from nature, we who live in the modern world who are not thinking, see, not you guys, not the small steppers. I'm just saying the other people that don't have the secret handshake, get removed from nature and removed from that process. And our relationship to food as modern humans is more one of nostalgia and comfort and even distraction. But we're no longer going to food for the need to survive or the nutritional instincts that we may have had or that are still there deep, deep, deep down as we're grabbing the Twinkie. It has nothing to do with that anything in that Twinkie is necessary for us. And so oftentimes we try to convince ourselves that we must need protein because we're craving chicken. But it ain't raw chicken, and it's not chicken that we're taking from a live chicken and eating it, you know, and just scarfing a live chicken that we've just taken down and we're eating with the feathers and all. Okay, so we're eating chicken that's, you know, seasoned and grilled and charbroiled and garliced and, you know, sauced and whatever else, and it's fine. But understand that the drive you have for that is one of craving. It's one of that of those relationships. It's nostalgia and memory, you know, and comfort. And on a purely physical level, our bodies do calibrate to what we do most of the time. So if you are eating a crap load of protein in terms of amount of calories, now mind you that kale has more protein per calorie than chicken, but if you're eating chicken, it's very high in calorie. It's a nutrient dense, a calorically dense food. It doesn't take, you know, if you eat a pound of chicken and a pound of kale, you're getting way more calories from the chicken. And so you're getting way more calories of fat and way more calories of protein in that pound. But again, real quick, if you eat 1,000 calories of kale and 1,000 calories, if you measure by calories of chicken, you're going to get more protein in the 1,000 calories of kale. And so when you go to heavy box, you know, the more heavy box you put in your body, the better. So back to the subject at hand. Understanding that is our relationship to food in the modern world, like other things that we come across, but having that understanding, to me, when I had that experience of like tasting that, or you know, of that memory of a Big Mac, I can literally, it is so vivid. Now, if I had a Big Mac today, would it be exactly like I remember it? I don't know, but the sense memory of that Big Mac is vivid like nobody's business. And what I understood and what I've thought about before, but it really hit home when I caught that whiff, because it literally transported me. I'm not even joking. I was like, boom, back in my soccer shorts and my cleats, walking to freaking McDonald's, sweaty, getting a Big Mac, 6-piece chicken McNugget, large fries, Coke, and barbecue sauce and hot mustard. Now, that's the right way to do Big Mac, McDonald's. Okay, so take notes on that. I don't want you taking notes on that. What I eat now, bananas and big, huge salads. I just want you to walk away with a correct way to order at McDonald's, okay? If they still have the McDLT, I'd push you there. That's what I would suggest. But they don't. They discontinued. I don't know why. It drives me nuts. It's bad, bad evolution. Okay. Now, I got to also tell you, I'm treating myself to a single malt tonight. That's what I just had. Sip of. And it's, you know, it's late. I'm doing the podcast late tonight. So that's where I'm at. Back to the Big Mac. So what I was thinking about is that the taste, how that set me off in that memory. And in a sense, I think that there's sometimes a drive in the modern world to somehow think, or on some level think, maybe not consciously, that we can recapture that time through the food that we associate with that time. Now, very clearly, when we are young, before we can make choices about the foods that we would naturally be driven to, I mean, I've worked with parents, I've taught parent in, you know, parent groups at schools, and oftentimes, and this has happened often, actually, a parent will say, you know, my kid, they just want to eat broccoli all day, and I keep trying to get them to XYZ, and I go, whoa, see, what's happening is your kid is still attached to their sort of natural drive in them, but it gets shifted because we are sold all these kinds of things, literally sold. And so a parent is going to go, I don't want you to eat too much broccoli. I need you to eat cheese because the doctor told me. Okay, so I'll get into that in a minute. But the taste of that Big Mac for me is also a memory. And what I understood in that moment is that I can either say, okay, I'm going to go get a Big Mac because it gives me comfort and it's nostalgia, and I somehow want to regain that experience that was associated with that Big Mac. Or I can say, I understand where that's coming from, but the taste of that Big Mac is going to be a memory. I'm going to keep it as a memory for me, just like the memories that were associated with the Big Mac. So the soccer and the pleasure of the weekend and going out with friends and my dad taking me to McDonald's, and those are fond memories. And the taste of that Big Mac can be a fond memory too, because having one today is going to be in conflict with who I am today. And it's, again, it's being aware. It's, if I had a Big Mac today, the only thing that's coming back is the taste. I can't go back to that, what that was. All I have are those memories. And in fact, I think the conflict that would be created by me having that food that I know now because of knowledge isn't serving me in the way that I want to be served would actually get in the way of the experience of those fond memories. And it's kind of about letting go, but it's also, it's for me, it's more about understanding who I am today and understanding that part of my life and understanding where I stand today. And that leads me to the subject of this week's podcast, Stand Your Ground. Was that not the best segue? I'm serious. That was awesome. You know what's on my desk right now is a guitar pick. I am free associating right now. Grounding. Now, those of you who have read my book, Approaching the Natural, A Health Manifesto, out now on Roundtree Press, is chapter 3. I talk about grounding. Now, on a very physical level, I came across grounding a few years ago, and it's going to freak you out, and you're going to think I'm weird. I'm not even going to go into it too much. Suffice it to say that I learned some things about the body and the surface of the earth. And again, in my filter and kind of how I see things, which is that we, you know, I look at us as a human, as a species again. That was part of the inspiration of my book, which was to, when I was driving up in my car, I had this moment where I was like, I'm in this machine, I'm shielded from the sun, I'm inside this little capsule driving, I am very, very removed from my natural state. And what is normal for us as a species in the modern world is not normal for us as a species in the natural world. And frankly, as I said, I think in the last podcast or the one before, our bodies have not adapted to the modern world. The modern world has advanced faster than we have. And our bodies are still in this state where we feed them calories that that have no nutritional value to them at all. They serve nothing, but the body is in survival mode of going, yeah, bring the calories, man. I may not get these next time. So bring it. Give me more of that Big Mac and French fries. Give me more French fries. Give me more French fries. That's what my body says, literally. Give me more French fries. And if I have French fries around, it doesn't even say give them to me. It just, I can just watch my hand go get them. I can just watch my hand and go, look at that. My left and right hand are getting French fries. That's just very weird. And I have no control over either of my hands. So in the grounding sense, there are, it has to do with the, I'm not going to go into it too much. It has to do with the electricity of the human body. The electricity that is surrounding us via the laptop that's 6 inches from me right now, or a foot, electrical wires, and cell phones at our heads, and all sorts of things like this, but then also our disconnection from the surface of the earth. And so as I'm reading these things years ago, I think this is totally insane. And then I think, well, everybody sort of understands that sunlight, being out in the sun, helps your body produce vitamin D, by the way, with the help of cholesterol, lest we think cholesterol is bad. Cholesterol is not bad at all. It's actually kind of amazing, and we make hormones out of it and all this kind of cool stuff. Cell walls, the whole deal. High cholesterol? Sure, not good. But I started thinking like, okay, well, there's a natural interaction between our bodies and the natural world. So every time I think something is weird, like the first time I found out that somebody who eats fruit all day is winning 100-mile races, and then I think, well, is that really that weird? Or is the fact that we eat something out of a package, like Kraft macaroni and cheese, while normal, is on its, you know, it's a one-way ticket to Cuckoo Town. I mean, let's face it. Now, if you're eating macaroni and cheese right now, Kraft macaroni and cheese, do it. I literally am not, there's no judgment here, okay? Everyone has their steps. But at least if you understand, like, it's not normal for us as a species, but neither is the scotch I'm drinking right now, right? And I've said this before too, and I'll say it again. To get hung up on one little thing, you know, I think it was the last one where I said, you know, it's like, no sugar for 30 days. I'm going to get in my car that's like a machine, and I'm going to move my body on the earth in a machine. And I can just move a little, I just push a little gas pedal and I move. That's no problem. But I'm not going to have sugar for 30 days. So a lot of what we do in the modern world isn't normal for us as a species. The question is, what's the balance? And my approach is, can we bring a little bit more of what is natural into our lives within the context of the modern world? We're not going to be 100% natural. We're not going to be animals again. It's just not going to happen. We're not animals in the wild. We are not going to be animals in the wild. And most of us, if we had a global meltdown and got thrown into the wild, would be kind of screwed. I mean, we're not, you know, like, we don't have the tools anymore. We can't even give birth, the most natural thing, without a team of physicians and nurse practitioners to make sure that the totally natural thing, and we have lactation consultants for breastfeeding. Like, it's not a bad thing. It's just, this is what we have become as we remove ourselves from the natural process. So what do we do? Well, my opinion is what we do is we understand first. Look at who we have become, who we were. And look at these things not with judgment and bad and good, but how do we appeal to our, what I believe our natural design is, which is to do the best we can at any given moment. And I'll say one last thing about my marathon. I did the best I could that day, yesterday. I did the best I could. I didn't slack. I was like, you know what? I'm doing the best I can here. Okay, so there's no regrets in terms of I did the best I could. I didn't go, God, I wish I could have pushed it a little hard. In fact, I think I pushed it too hard. I believe our natural design in terms of health, and everyone's going, you know, he's kind of hung up on the marathon. I think it does bother him. He's like, keeps on talking about it. He keeps bringing it up all the way through the podcast. I better send him an email of support. You guys, I'm going to just be a broken record here, but I can't get enough of your emails. And I also will tell you that if I don't get back to you, like in a, you know, in timely fashion, I 100% will get back to you. Like 100%, there is not a doubt, unless you are just railing on how cool a minivan is, I may not get back to you because we're just not on the same page. We're not on the same page. But otherwise, expect an email back. It just may not be in a few days. I get emails coming in pretty steady, and sometimes it takes me a little while, and I don't just want to shoot back some stupid one-liner. Okay? Okay. So my point is that there are things about us that are that we can actually do in the modern world that are that are still natural, that we can still do, like eat lettuce, you know, a stalk of celery that's pretty close to natural. Now, did celery exist on the earth 100,000 years ago? Probably not. But it comes out of the earth now. And therefore, it is made up of pretty close to what I'm assuming, you know, is coming out of the earth. I mean, it's just a fact, okay? Unless it's been altered by humans. It's a pretty natural thing, okay? We can get lost in the wild food thing and the this and the that, and then we start getting the stress in our modern world because we're not going to be wild again. We're not going to be animals again. We got to let that go. But what we can do is recognize the things in us that are by design animal, like our nutritional needs, like our desire to be happy and to feel joy and to experience family and tribe. And one of those things is to be connected physically with our environment. Now, we can put asphalt on the ground and we can build houses around us. But the fact of the matter is we are designed and to adapt to our natural world, and we thrive in that world. And so, when I did research on that, included that in my book, it is because I was reading things about physically what happens. Just like vitamin D and sunlight, there is a physical reaction to touching the earth. It's how we evolved. And this is the thing. It's like we can go back and forth about everything. I can give you 10 articles that say milk is good for you, and I can find 10 articles that say milk is bad for you. But what I wanted to do is get out of that game. I wanted to get out of that game because that's, I don't think it's getting us anywhere. But what I really feel strongly about is that when you look at the natural design of the human being, there are truths that appear. One of those things is that we're mammals and we're not supposed to breastfeed after we're age 2 or 3. All signs point to every mammal and humans, physically what happens to us after about 2 or 3, we are not designed to breastfeed after that. And we're certainly not designed to breastfeed from a cow, which is what you're doing when you eat cheese or yogurt or milk. It's breastfeeding. You're not supposed to breastfeed. Now, if you do, it's fine. And guess why you do? Because you were given that as a kid before you made choices about your own life. And now you are used to those food or other foods like it, just like that Big Mac that I had when I was a kid. And I am used to that kind of thing. Now, just know that for now. I'm not telling you to give up dairy right now. I'm just saying, understand the things in your life that aren't for, you know, your body. They're for your mind. That's okay. So is the scotch I'm having right now. But then you can put it into perspective and you can put it in your body, literally, in a balance with the other things that you do most of the time that set your level of health. I'm at a level of health. You're at a level of health. The guy over there, and I just pointed to a part of my room where there is nobody, is at a level of health. Keyboard there. That keyboard is at a level of health. And what I realize is that the grounding, what I read about is that there's a physical reaction to putting your skin on the ground, which is that you balance your body electrically. You ground your body just like you have a ground plug, a grounding outlet in your house. You ground electrically to the surface of the earth. It is fascinating. You look it up. I know it sounds crazy, but there are crazier things we're doing, okay, in the modern world that we don't think are crazy because it's normal for us in the modern world. Like sitting in a cubicle. To me, that's crazier than standing on the ground barefoot. Just saying. Okay? It's the most normal thing in the world. But Why is it that those things are not considered normal in the modern world? Well, probably because of economics. And that's why I say in the book, our health is governed largely by economics in this country. We're not advised on nutrition and health for the good of the people, okay? And the better we understand that, the better choices we can make around that. Now, what I also thought about grounding and the word grounding even is that even the word carries a certain aspect of maintaining a center. In fact, when you have people who are grounding influences on you, when you feel grounded, you feel centered, you feel at ease, you feel there's a strength there, there's a foundation beneath you that is comforting. What I've come across with clients and what I've come across with people who I just, you know, work with or come, you know, just, you know, communicating with and everything else is that when you begin to think about your own health and happiness in a way that isn't typical, and what's typical in the modern world is diets and quick fixes, right? That's what we do. We go on, and it's not a criticism per se, but we go on a meditation retreat for 3 days and or, you know, 10 days or whatever, and that's going to solve everything. We're going to, you know, do a 7-day diet or a 21-day cleanse or a this and that, and that's going to get, and we just repeatedly go to those things even though they don't stick. And when we take on our own health and happiness in a long-term way, now, am I selling you on my approach? You bet your ass, okay? Because I've seen too many things. I know they don't work 95%. So I'm not literally selling you because this podcast is free. But what I am saying is that when you embark on health and happiness in a small step way, when you consider your life and you add things into your life in ways that are manageable for you, that do not add stress to you, and you keep that thinking about that little by little more every day, and it's way more about the act of putting whatever it is in your body, it's the thought behind that act. When you embark on that kind of goal and that kind of lifestyle, there's a pretty good chance you're going to get criticized. And I wouldn't say that other than the fact that I have seen it so many times now that it's kind of insane. Like I just kind of a reality. Like people who eat things that are not in the modern world, you know, considered normal or even healthy, or, you know, can't have protein. I mean, go up, look at the USDA plate on it. I show this in my classes. It's got 4 sections on the plate: fruits, vegetables, grains, and protein are the 4 sections on that plate. Fruits are food. Vegetables are food. Grains are food. Protein is not food. Protein is in food. And according to that plate, and if you guys want to see it, Google it. According to that plate, kale, which is 50% protein, according to that plate, has no protein because it's on the vegetable side, on the wedge of vegetable, and not on the protein wedge. I mean, this is the stuff that we are bombarded with. So if you're eating plants like I eat, you know, I get criticized. I get, you know, this and that about being plant-based. If you are not grounded in the decisions you make around your own health and happiness, you will be affected by that in a way that will sway you. I've talked about it, like, you know, you become like a pinball. You know, you're literally bounced around, and it's very hard because we are bombarded. And what I've said often, I'll say again, is if we go into the world unthinking, we will be beholden to the messaging that we are bombarded with, especially now more than ever, because we're holding little things in our hands that are mobile commercial devices. You know, we're on Twitter, we're on Facebook, we're on email, we're on the internet, in our pocket now. So even less time to have time. Even less time to have time. Does that make sense? I think so. I was thinking in this subject that diet books, some of them, like, well, I mean, ones I like, not just because I like them, but I came across some along my researching and 20 years of reading on this before I even, you know, thought about writing a book. And I think that they're necessary because I think in the context of the marketplace, I think there has to be a balance. And I appreciate these guys out there and women out there who are putting forward an anti-big business message, which I, yes, they're selling books, but I don't see there being like the machine of industry behind the China study. You know what I'm saying? T. Colin Campbell. Like I don't get that T. Colin Campbell's like driving one of those old Cadillacs with the horns on the hood, you know, like the Cadillac limo, just getting out with a freaking huge 10-gallon hat, you know. Why that's the image of big business, I don't know. I didn't make it up. I think they're good to have a balance, because the fact of the matter is right now, and this is evidenced by the fact that you can see the just horrific health of humans in the world, and almost no worse than in the United States, nowhere worse than the United States. Right now, industry is got the heavier hand. I mean, the food industry has the heavier hand. I mean, the USDA is governing the curriculum of dietitians. It's not a pretty sight. So to have these diet books by Colin Campbell and McDougall and Furman and Esselstyn and these guys out there, it's I think it's necessary, because I think has to be some sort of counterbalance. Because frankly, there's not a campaign that counteracts, you know, milk, it does a body good. I mean, there's no ad on the next page that says, no, oh no, it doesn't. And I think that I have a similar goal with those diet books, that I want to be a balance in a way to that information. But I think what I realize is that I wanted to be a balance to the whole picture of diets and the whole, I just don't want to be part of that game. I mean, I didn't write a diet book for that reason, you know, and I have to tell people all the time, like I'm a certified nutritionist, and they're like, oh, they either think my book's a cookbook or a diet book. And it's neither. It's a philosophy book. And because I believe that the only way out of the mess that we're in is to use our natural minds in the way that our minds are designed to be used, which is creatively and with the goal of happiness and joy. I think we accept those as a premise. We can move forward with this thing and figure out the best ways to achieve those things. And I just wanted out of the game because, and this is the reason why I'm coming back to this in the grounding sense, is because if you don't use thought, then you're going to be, like I said, beholden to advertising, but you're also going to be beholden to fear. I think this goes back to my fear, you know, nothing to fear except the scary stuff. I mean, we are bombarded, as you know, by scary, scary things. Like, if you don't drink milk, you know, your bones are going to crumble into, you know, dust, and you're going to turn green and your head's going to shrink. I don't even know. I do know that we have horrible bone health, even though we're drinking more dairy. So we can, maybe there's a better chance of your skin turning green. I don't know. Than there is your bones being healthy from drinking that stuff. You know, if you don't, make sure that protein, if you get enough protein, you got to make sure you have enough protein. Are you getting enough protein? If you don't eat meat, you're going to die. And the people that are living and thriving in ways that are bucking the conventional wisdom around diet and nutrition, they must all be anomalies. You know, the fact that they're running 100 miles, that must be an anomaly. I mean, the forces of what's driving our nutritional landscape are very, very powerful. And here's my problem, aside from the obvious. If you do diets, if you get in diets, you never become grounded. And I'm not talking about grounded on the earth. That's just part and parcel to the picture of, like, mental grounding is the same as physical grounding. It is building a foundation that you can stand on when you enter the world. And if you do diets, you are not ever going to get in touch with what feels right to you. Because at the end of the day, like I said, I can throw 10 studies that say yes and 10 studies that say no. And if you don't know and have never experienced something in a way that you really get into it for yourself, you'll never be grounded. And you will be susceptible to the winds of change, to the doctor telling you that you're going to poison your kid if you don't feed your kid milk when they're not trained in nutrition. And, you know, I tell people that I work with all the time and people that I teach, it's like a doctor advising on nutrition, if they're not trained in nutrition, which most of them aren't, is as irresponsible as if I advised anybody on medication. I'm not a drug therapist. It's not my training. Why would I do that? It would be unethical, but guess what else? Illegal. And somehow my pediatrician has the gall to tell me to feed my children cow's milk. It's insane. Now, should people feel bad if out there listening to this if you feed your child cow's milk? No, of course not, because that's what you've been advised and you're a good parent and you do what you're told by an authority in that regard. But what I'm saying is that when you inform yourself and when you begin to think in a way that considers, not with judgment and self-criticism, because that's just going to get in the way of the truth. When you start to consider the facts and look at things, and maybe you don't believe me, but what if you just listen and just try it on for size? And here's the beauty of the small step approach. And I'm the small step advocate, so I'm just going to talk about it. When you ease your way in, you get to test the waters without freaking yourself out. If you've been told your whole life, and you're 40, okay? And you've been told your whole life that milk provides you good bone health. And tomorrow, because you listen to my podcast, you give up milk, there's a 99.9% chance that that's going to scare the crap out of you. And I would never advocate that. I would never advocate that. Unless for some reason you are just totally ready to do that, in which case, fine. But if you're not ready to do that, if all you're doing is going on mind versus the fear, I'm stacked against 40 years of fear that if you don't do this, you're going to suffer immensely. Well, that's a hard pill to swallow, no pun intended. And if you don't ease your way in, put it this way, when you do ease your way in, you can test the waters. If you listen to me and go, you know what, it kind of makes sense. Like he said that adult mammals, like we're not meant to breastfeed. Like that makes sense. And I know that my doctor says this, and then I read this plant-based diet book, and they said that. Geez, what do I believe? There's too much conflicting information. Do you know how much conflicting information there is in the world right now? A ton. I mean, it's insane. It's insane. I don't even know. That's why I don't even want to be part of the game, because it's freaking everybody out. Nobody knows what to believe. And then we put labels on top of that. Vegetarian and vegan and paleo, right? And we're selling these things like they're, you know, flying off the shelves. We label everything. We have conflicting. We get in arguments. Paleos versus the vegans. It's the worst movie I've ever seen. Where was I? When you ease your way in, you get to test the waters. If you think about something and you go, you know what? It kind of makes sense to me, the no dairy thing, and you just give it up. Your body's going to react to the abrupt change because you've been calibrated to dairy, so you're probably going to feel crappy. So if you do it in one day, you're going to go, see, this is why I do dairy, because I feel like crap if I don't eat it. Well, of course you do, because you just changed everything overnight. So that's not realistic. That's why people who go, well, I just need protein. If I don't eat blah, 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 I don't feel well. Of course you don't, because you've recalibrated. You've calibrated to what you do most of the time. If you change your most of the time overnight, you're going to feel it. If you're not aware of that process, you're going to stop doing what makes you feel bad, and you're going to go back to what makes you feel good, not knowing that if you continued on this better path, you'd feel better than you ever felt before. But most people don't get past that transition, and that's why people don't stick to diets, because it doesn't make you feel good mentally, and it probably doesn't even make you feel good physically. Cleanses are rough. They don't clean you out in 7 days, but they make you feel crappy. The benefit, of course, the payoff is that you get to lose weight for a week. When you ease your way in and think about things and take the pressure off yourself that you don't have to give this up overnight, and that an amazing first step is to think about it, just to apply some thought. And even that is small steps. That's a minute a day, maybe, to just kind of sit down for a second and kind of think about your own health and happiness. Determine if you are as healthy and happy as you want to be. I mean, that's number one. But if you understand that, then you can then make little changes in ways that don't freak you out, don't play into the fear that's associated with health and happiness. I mean, I am convinced. I started reading books on fear before I was writing my book, because I have taught hundreds and hundreds of people, you know, face to face, and fear is the prime motivator of not changing. I mean, they can listen to what I'm saying. I'm standing here. I think I look pretty healthy. I'm 45. I'm running. Okay, I didn't break 4 hours, so maybe I'm not that healthy. Uh-oh, there he goes again. But they can see my kids perfectly healthy. And yet, the idea of not feeding their child dairy is totally freaking them out, because they don't want to take that chance. Well, what if, right? And you don't want to be responsible for that. But I think with thinking, I think with applying thought into first yourself, worry about your kids later. I know that sounds weird, but the process has to start with you. You have to ground yourself in this process. And the way to provide grounding for you is that when you ease your way in, you get to get in touch with what just feels right. And when you ease your way in, the thought process begins. You're not doing something because a diet told you. You're not even doing something because I told you. You're looking at kind of the general idea of your own health and happiness. You're reading things, or you're listening to this podcast. And I am going to advocate, obviously, for whole plants on the purely nutritional level. And sure, there's benefits to the environment and all those kinds of things. It all plays into our world, creating our world, being selfish in creating a world that we want to live in. And you're looking at those things, but you're not executing action based on what I'm telling you. I don't even tell you what small steps to take. I'm such a small step advocate that I don't even name the small steps, because they may be too big for you, or they may be too small for you. I advocate for the concept of small steps. I have information. Other people have information. But what I'm advocating for is that you try things in ways that you understand eventually that feel right for you. You can test this process out, and as soon as you begin the process of small steps, you don't even have to find the balance that you might find at some point, where like you find the balance between heavy box foods and light box foods, or you include a little bit more of what's natural in all these regards, creativity and movement of your body, and you find a balance down the line. But as soon as you take small steps to that end, you begin to be grounded. You begin to ground yourself by virtue of you beginning that process. It is a process of grounding. Part of what I advocate for is also putting your skin on the ground or touching a tree. I mean, it's how we evolved. Yes, we can. Yes, Sid, you're crazy. You're totally ridiculous. Okay. But before Nikes, somehow we walked around on the earth in bare feet. You know, somehow our kids love being in bare feet, go running around the earth. Their feet get tough. My kids are running all over rocks. They don't even flinch. They're running over pebbles and rocks, and they don't even think about it. And by the way, they're running on the balls of their feet just the way that we evolved before some shoe company told us that we had to have raised heels and cushions around our feet. Now, if that sounds crazy to you and you're interested in changing your health and happiness, why not give it a try? You know, when you break it down into minute, so small steps that maybe taking your shoes off for 30 seconds is safe for you and that feels okay, then you begin the process of like, you do that and you go, well, that wasn't so bad. That actually felt kind of good maybe. Or it didn't damage me. It wasn't weird. Maybe I have a little less, I don't have, you know, I have half dairy, half cow's milk, and half soy milk on my cereal tomorrow morning. Well, that didn't kill me. Kind of felt okay. Let me try that. Because I have dairy like three other times during the day. So, you know, if it's a calcium issue or bone issue, like it's not going to derail me. Let me just begin that process. And with that process, because you're not following a diet that says give up dairy for 21 days, but then you're just going to go on dairy again. Because if you give it up tomorrow, you're going to feel crappy and you can't wait for the day that 21 days are up because you want to get it back. You'll begin the process. And then when you when you find your balance, it's something that is going to stick because you're grounded in, you've created a connection. You've created a connection to the action that you're doing. You're grounded in that action. It's connecting your body physically to the earth, but the metaphor is that you've connected yourself to the process. Diets don't connect yourself to the process. There's somebody telling you that day two, and you do the day two, but you're not testing the waters. You're not connecting to that process. You're not internalizing that process. You don't become a grounded person. You know, have you ever heard like, oh, he's very grounding? You know, they're grounded. They're very grounded. What does it mean? They're real. They're grounded. They're not full of crap. They're authentic. They have a figurative and a literal foot on the ground. They have a foundation that they stand upon from which they enter the world. It is a place of strength and a place of confidence, and it cannot be faked. Grounding is connection. It's connection to the earth. And its connection to the process, it is security, it is confidence. It cannot be bought, and it cannot be faked. It has to be experienced, and it takes time. I cannot be a marathoner by tomorrow running a marathon if I've never trained. I have to go through the process of training. I have to ease my way in increments that don't injure me. And I did that. And in the world of food, you can't go from here to a diet tomorrow and expect to be a healthy person. It doesn't buy you the term healthy person. You want to be a healthy person. You want to be a happy person. You begin the process of understanding what it is you want in your life, how you want to live, who you want to be. And taking steps in that direction that ground you in the process. And you stand your ground. And then when people come up and they criticize you for not feeding your kids milk, which I've been criticized for, and they make fun of the fact that even though you didn't bring up food, that you don't have top sirloin on your steak, and you're not judging anybody else, and you're just having a great meal and hanging out with friends, but you got to hear about that you're doing something that's different from what they're doing, and therefore you need to be criticized about it, which has happened to me. If I'm not grounded in my process, I will possibly give in to that kind of thing. Why would I put myself through that unless I had an anchor holding me in my position because it makes me happy? Because listening to that crap doesn't derail me because I'm grounded. Because I went through the process, not because somebody told me to do it, because I read information, I found out some things, I gave them a try, they worked, my asthma went away, and I thought there's something freaking to this. And it's not about me when I get the criticism. It's not about me. It's that my actions are making somebody else pay attention to their actions, and they don't want to deal with that, and that's not my problem. Unless they want to make it my problem by asking me for help, and then I'm happy to help. But short of that, I continue my process of being grounded so that I'm not derailed by all the things, including not breaking 4 hours. Am I disappointed? Yes. Am I derailed? Not by a long shot. Only thought about it probably once today, and it was yesterday. There are things that we can recognize in our lives that are made up by us, that are not real, that are fine and fun and good to go for. But the fact of the matter is there are more important things. My breaking 4 hours has nothing to do with my health and happiness. It would have made me happy, yes, but it doesn't derail me. It's one of the things that I shoot for. But it's a very specific thing. And the picture of health and happiness in the modern world is a broad, broad picture. And if you don't ground yourself in the process of your own health and happiness, you can get derailed by the littlest minute things, minutiae, stuff that doesn't affect us as human beings. But if we're not grounded people, then the petty thing at work is going to derail our process. It's going to derail our health and happiness. We're going to give up our security and our confidence to something that makes no difference to anybody. But if we're not grounded in ourselves, then we will give in to those kinds of things and lose complete perspective on what it is that we want from life. Now, I never fill in the particulars in terms of what we want in life, but I believe that we're designed to be healthy and we're designed to be happy. And when we, again, accept those at premises, accept those things as a premise, and we move from there, and we go, okay, now I'm going to begin the process. So in moving forward, ground, stand your ground. Learn to stand your ground. You can't even stand your ground tomorrow necessarily because that may not be authentic for you, but you can begin the process of grounding yourself in thought and consideration about what truly serves you long term. And when you begin that process, trust me, you will be grounded in ways that nobody can knock you over. You will have a foundation in your life from which you will enter the world every day. And it will change the way that you experience other people, and it will change the way that you experience the world, and both of those changes will be for the better. And I wish that for everybody. And you take your own time, because it's you, because you experience it, because you call the shots. And you take your time in ways, and when people criticize you because you didn't do a diet or because you're not doing things fast enough or because, you know, listening to this podcast didn't make you lose 10 pounds in 3 weeks, you grin and you go, oh yeah. And the next day you get up and you climb out of bed, you wander down to the kitchen, you pour yourself a glass of water and you drink it, and you don't think, I did this because this is on a diet plan and this is what it said to do at 7:42 a.m. You drink your glass of water because you know and you feel that it is nourishing for your body, and you understand the act that you did in that moment that took 30 seconds was an act of strength and grounding, and you grin, and the next day you do it again. And the day after that, you do that and you add another little step at your own time. And you listen to the criticism and the, what are you doing? And that's ridiculous and this and that. And you might even hear those things in your own mind about yourself. And you grin and you do it again. And you continue that process for the rest of your life. And in the process, you are grounded. In the process, you are grounded. You don't end up grounded. You are grounded in the process. You show me a diet that does that. You show me a fitness plan that does that. It doesn't happen. Thank you guys for your support in the marathon. And I wish you all well. And guess when I'll be back? Next week. That's right. You nailed it, guy on the elliptical. Next week. All right, guys. Twice gone, once returned, in a day you decided me. The black news held on like a tightly held news. On our own time we both set us free.